Welcome to Days in the Wild. I just want to talk to you real quick before we jump into this next episode. I can't urge you enough to get out there and give us a review on iTunes or the Podbean app. It's super important. Helps me keep this free, helps me reach new people and continue to grow. If you don't know how to do that, hit me up and I'll help you through it. Also want you to go and give Phoenix Shooting Bags a look. Check out their website, phoenixshootingbags.com. They are our main sponsor and they put an excellent product out, and it means a lot for me for you to go check them out and take a look and see what they got. So without further ado, let's roll into this next episode. Hi, welcome to Days in the Wild, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. So how's it going, Chrissy? How are you?
Good. How are you?
As you know, I'm crazy. I'm a little spastic today. I had to reschedule this meeting, and even started late. It's just I'm playing Mr. Mom, and I'm having a bunch of stuff going on with my other business today. Like, none of this stuff was on the schedule, but you know how it goes.
It's life. Yep, I get it.
I'm just rolling with the punches. So if I seem a little off today, guys, it's because I am. So why don't you give us a little rundown about yourself and what you do?
Absolutely. Like I said, my name is Chrissy Knox. I am born and raised and still live in Oregon. I grew up very much in a hunting family. That is what we did. That was our vacations. And that's what we looked forward to every year. And as I got older, we typically rifle hunted as a family. And as I got older, it got harder and harder to draw rifle tags in Oregon. So that's when my brother Ryan and I got the bright idea to buy bows and have something to do in the off years when we weren't drawing tags. And little did we know that that was going to shift the entire future. Neither of us have picked up a rifle since, and absolutely fell in love with the sport of archery. And everything else has just kind of happened organically from there. My first job is as a mom. I have a son, 8-year-old Jesse, who also loves the outdoors and is a very active little boy. And I'm sure you can imagine having him home right now, and things are very busy. My background is in agriculture and animal science, but I currently am a bookkeeper on a farm, and I also work at my son's school. It keeps my schedule very flexible so that I can be mom first. So it's just kind of a wild ride right now. I do a lot with archery. I do a lot of teaching to women and kids. And get out in the field as much as I possibly can. So I stay very, very busy, but it's all good.
Awesome. So tell me a little bit of like what it's been like in a predominantly male-driven industry. Have you faced any adversity? Have you, been presented with any negativity,
I think we all have to some degree. I feel like I have been very fortunate. Like I said, I grew up hunting. I never realized in the family I lived with, I had all brothers. I only had one girl cousin. I typically was the only girl in hunting camp, so I didn't realize that I was a minority. I just thought I came from a family with very few girls. So growing up, I was not made to feel special because I was a girl. It was just what we did. And I just assumed all the other girls that were out there hunting with their parents and doing that stuff as well. So I didn't even realize it was unusual for me to be the way I was. So I think that kind of set me up for not feeling like a minority as I move forward. Like I was telling you, archery really lit the fire for me. And I was just out of college when I started doing that. And my brother is my main hunting partner. And we started, we went in the woods, made a ton of mistakes, started learning from them, started having some successes and learning what not to do. And we had always kind of talked about, it would be fun to pay that forward and teach others. Maybe they can shorten the learning curve from our mistakes. And that's just kind of how it started. And I feel like I saved a lot of the negativity by doing it that way. Everything I did and we did was very real. There was no fakeness. We admitted our mistakes. We admitted we weren't experts. And from there, we started working with companies that we had already been using their products for years and years. So it made representation very easy and honest. And I also believe, you know, when you walk the walk, not just talk the talk, you're going to naturally get less negativity and adversity because you're putting your boots in the dirt. So I feel like that has been a huge help in that. Social media is where you see the most adversity. There are some men that just don't want to talk to or listen to what a woman has to say. And I've learned just to respect that and teach them, you know, actions speak louder than words. You know, if you don't want to talk to me, that's fine. But I'm going to try to meet up with you later or find you on social media so that you can see I am actually doing what you're out doing. And a lot of times it works out great and they'll come back and start talking to you or asking me questions and vice versa. So I can usually take care of that pretty easily. Social media is where you get those weekend warriors of the keyboard that are really brave sitting behind, you know, their cup of coffee. And I feel like men and women both are going to catch the brunt of that with, you know, anti-hunters especially. We all face that. Those death threat messages and all the nasty things you hear on Facebook. But I do think that women are perceived as an easier target, so that they may get targeted a little more often by someone that isn't quite as brave. They feel like they can go after a woman a little easier. When my son was 6 months old, he and I were on the cover of a bow hunting magazine with a blacktail I had shot, and it was the most adorable picture, and I absolutely loved it. And of course, I shared the heck out of it because he was the cutest little thing ever on there. And I actually received multiple and recurring death threats from people saying that they'd like to cut the head off my baby like I had done to that buck. And I mean, what do you even say to that? Like, really? I'm the monster here? So through that was an awakening, because to hear somebody say that about your baby, I mean, mama bear comes out and you get angry. And it took me a while to calm down and still learn to kill them with kindness and information. Because you're obviously dealing with ignorance. So once I was able to approach my answer, I'm probably nicer than a lot of people think I should be, but it works. And if I give them information and don't feed into it and don't take the bait, I've even gotten apologies from people that said, I didn't realize, you know, what hunting was about for you and, you know, why you take trophy photos. And so I've learned a lot, and it's gotten easier and easier. And I won't say I have a canned response, but generally my answer is typically the same. And I like to, you know, address each individual attacker in a way I think that's going to reach them. So it has worked for me, and I do feel really lucky. I have not had to deal with what a lot of women out there have had to deal with. But I'm sure it's coming, and I do deal with it on occasion. And it's not fun, but we have to deal with it. And I know guys are dealing with it too.
I deal with those all the time. I was more
concerned. Roll with punches.
Yeah, I've had so many death threats. I've had people tell me they want to kill my whole family, and
yeah,
you know, stab me in the heart, and this and that. And, you know, I used to really get heated about it, and now it's just like, you know, I kind of. Those people, the one that with the death threat people, I really don't even try to change their minds. I just,
yeah,
delete and move on. But it's the ones that have like more of an inquisitive mind about them. The more that are saying like, you know, why is it that you do that? What you know, if they're not outright saying, oh, you're a freaking horrible person, mm-hmm. whatever. Those are the people that I do very similar to you. I try to educate them. I try to, you know, this is why I do this. This is me. This is what hunting means to conservation. This is, you know, why animals are on this earth. I've written a lot of articles about that stuff too. And I was promoting a very big movement for it, or not a big movement, but I was promoting a movement to help hunters educate non-hunters so that, you know, we could have a more common ground and better understanding. You know, you're not going to convert people. You're not going to – you might convert a few people into hunters, but
you might keep from becoming anti-hunters, though.
Exactly. So, you know, and I was working on that a lot. And it was so funny how much pushback I got from hunters about doing that. Like, they're like, I think it was a competition thing. They don't want to have more they don't want more hunters.
Right.
They don't want to recruit more hunters because it's already hard to get access and public lands already, you know, hard enough, especially in the East Coast and Midwest. There doesn't exist, you know, out here in the West for us, it's not as bad. But yeah, I mean, I live in a state that's 80% public land. So it's like, you know, for me,
right. Yeah,
it's not hard to get away from people. It really isn't.
Right.
So, but, you know, I get it. I get it in those, you know, those states where, yeah, like Michigan and where they got, you know, the Orange Army, you know, they call it the Orange Army going out, you know, they don't want more hunters because it means more competition, but they don't.
It's a balance.
They don't see the big picture. Yeah. But no, I like the way you're handling that. That's great. What about from the hunting community? Do you find a lot of guys are like this is just another pretty face out there with a, you know, I feel like if you're an ugly girl, you don't get it, but when you're pretty, you're gonna get it. Like,
I'm not sure where you're putting me in at, but
category.
you can almost see him coming. I'm really fortunate to get to do a lot of the things I do with my brother. We do a lot of hunting seminars, archery seminars, and it's actually a perfect combo. The brother sister thing is unique in itself, but we can target each individual person. Sometimes we can see somebody sit in a crowd and I'll whisper to Ryan, like, he is not going to want to talk to me. He's going to ask you all the questions, or he's going to be that guy that's trying to show us he knows more than us. And a lot of times that is the case. And, you know, they'll look right past me and talk to Ryan. And Ryan is really good about it because he'll say, you know what? He says, he goes, I could answer this, but my sister could answer this better than I do. She has more experience. So I'm going to hand this off to her, and vice versa. And, you know, and the same goes for him. You know, some women that haven't been hunting are more comfortable asking another woman a question, and I can be that for them as well. And some of them just want to talk to him because he's a good looking guy and I'm just his sister. So, so it's just, it's a funny combo to work with, but we're able to diffuse those individuals pretty easily, but they definitely exist. And you can spot them coming a mile away usually, but I don't let it get to me. I mean, if they don't want to talk to me, that's fine. Like I said, I try to follow up with them or find them on Facebook or Instagram and let them see what I'm out doing. You know, I'm not, like you said, just a pretty face out in the woods. I'm actually packing out meat. I'm actually setting up trail cameras. I'm doing the work. And then if that doesn't work, then they're just not going to be persuaded and you just give up. Kill them with kindness, always.
You know, I think this industry, or this sport, whatever you want to call it, it's a very chest beating sport, you know? It's very, look at me, look what I did, look at this, you know? And I think on so many different levels, because I get it, I get that all the time, like we're, just because I had a TV show, and there's a stigma around that now. Like back in the day,
right,
that was a cool thing, you know, but now it's like, if you got a TV show, you can't be taken serious, you know?
Right.
You know, that kind of stuff, like, I actually wrote this whole article, and I never published it because I was going to offend too many people. But it was the evolution of the hunting industry. It was kind of cheeky because it was funny how things that were popular at one point are now perceived as, you know, douchebaggy or whatever, filmmaker or, you know, it's just like. So many things like that. Just anyway, but I don't want to get into it.
Well, and social media is kind of like walking that line as well, because you are yourself promoting. Oh, yeah. And that's a hard thing to do. I'm not comfortable doing it. I'd much rather post a picture of my kid or something with me not in it. But I have learned that by self-promoting in a good way that isn't over the top and is honest, you do get more reaction. And that's what we want to do. We want to bring people onto our side. We want to make hunters look classy and intelligent and...
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, and it's a really hard thing to do. So like, I don't like posting every single day, or you may not see very often, but I feel like when I do, if the content is quality and you are self-promoting yourself in the right way, it is going to bring positive feedback.
Yeah, for sure. So, what's your favorite kind of hunt?
Oh, hands down, archery elk. Not even a contest. With that?
I said, especially being from Oregon, I figured you were going to say.
Yeah. Yes.
Right. Chase Rosies, or do you go after Rockies?
Primarily Rockies. I love Eastern Oregon, the terrain, the smell, the openness. I would love to kill a big Rosie someday. I have yet to do it because I can't give up my Eastern Oregon hunts.
I haven't killed a Rosie yet either. So, but I think I went three times now? Four. Three or four times. Yeah. I've shot
it. It's the real deal. It's not for the faint of heart.
No, it's not. It's a pretty tough hunt for sure. So, what about the? You said that, you know, you like the terrain and everything. What about elk gets your motor running?
Oh my gosh! Well, hunting them during archery season, during the rut. I mean, it is as intimate as it gets. I mean, you're on the ground. You're up close and personal. If you hunt long enough, you're going to get bugle breath in your face. You might even get peed on. I mean, I've seen all these things happen. I actually watched a cow elk bite my brother in the arm as he was standing next to some. Yeah. I mean, it's, you don't get any closer, and their guard is down as far as it's ever going to be during the rut. You are playing on every one of their emotions. The whole thing is an emotional and mental game, yours and the elk's. And that's what I love. I mean, it's a meeting of the minds. They're strategizing to either fight or breed. You're strategizing to take advantage of that and get in there and put one on the ground. And even when you don't connect, I mean, you literally could tell me I would never kill another elk again as long as I live. I would still go out and hunt. I would change nothing. I would be calling into every canyon. I would be hunting every day that I possibly could just to get those experiences, even if I never flung an arrow again. So elk, a lot of animals are like that, especially when you get to hunt them in the rut. But elk, there's just something about it. It grabbed me, and it's there for good. That will be the one animal I will always choose to hunt over anything else.
Elk, you know, if elk had the same amount of opportunity that deer did in the United States, and I never, like, if you gave me that, ultimatum, yeah, you only could choose one animal, I think it would be elk too.
Yeah.
But because it's so limited, not so, but it's fairly limited. I mean, we do have, you know, Oregon, Washington, Idaho, Colorado, where you could get over the counter tags or whatever, but everything else, the draws are pretty hard. I would probably have to lean towards deer because of that more than anything. But because you can hunt deer from August to really to March, you know, you can hunt whitetail and whatever in Florida in March. So you could pretty much kind of.
Right.
A much longer season, and you could go a lot of places, and the opportunities, most of it's over the counter. So, you know, mule deer is a little bit harder, but deer in general. So,
deer is definitely second. We have blacktail and muleys here, and I love hunting them both. So,
right where you're at, you're right on the cusp of where the.
I'm on the western side of Oregon, but we are about an hour away from where the muleys start, and so we hunt both. We typically will target velvet muleys in the early season, and if we don't fill those tags, we can hunt blacktail in the rut on the west side in November. So you got lots of time to get it done.
Cool. What would you say the three things that you could attribute your success to in the field?
Oh my goodness. I don't even know that they would be things. The first thing would definitely be my family. Whether it be the family I grew up with that got me into this. My grandpa, who's no longer with us, was my hunting partner my entire life. If it weren't for him, if it weren't for my mom and dad, who watched my kiddo so that I can leave on crazy backcountry hunts every fall or whenever they happen. And my kiddo being understanding, he gets just as excited for me when I leave, knowing that someday he gets to go on these big hunts with me. So he is so good about me leaving him for 10 days at a time. And that's hard because there's a lot of guilt there as well. And then also the people I'm with in the woods. My primary hunting partners are my brother and my boyfriend, Stacy. And they are the two biggest badasses I know in the whole wide world. And they push me to my limit, knowing I can do it. And I owe a lot of my successes and hunts to them. So the combination of those three groups of people, I would not get to be the hunter and put in the time I do without them. Secondly, I'd have to say most of my success has come from my mistakes. We were self-taught for the most part, and 90% of what I have done in the woods has been a mistake. And I have repeated those mistakes, but eventually I do learn from them. And I can go back to them and say, you know, you tried this 10 times before, Chrissy, it's not going to work. So try something else. And we continue to make mistakes, and to not be afraid to make those mistakes and talk about them and admit them. I feel like I've become a much better hunter and more successful in the field as far as punching tags because I learned from my mistakes. Thirdly, my brother and I have a motto. We always say hunt happy. And that is truly our motto. I mean, we spend a lot of time in the woods giggling like little girls when we shouldn't, when it's, you know, game time, we got a bull coming in, one of us trips, the other one starts giggling, and pretty soon we are just roaring. And, you know, the bull, whether he comes in or not, we have made that hunt absolutely hilarious and memorable. Probably more times than not, we don't get the animal because of it. But also the days where we aren't seeing animals and we aren't getting in, you know, we aren't hearing the bugles we want, or the setups are wrong, the wind's bad. Because we have that attitude and because we just have fun doing what we're doing, regardless of a kill, I feel like every hunt is successful, even when we're not punching tags. So I think that for anybody, if you're in it for the kill or just the, you know, that moment when you fling the arrow, you're going to be disappointed 99.9% of the time. So if you can find a way to enjoy every aspect of the hunt, you are already a successful hunter. And that's truly what I am. The day I'm not happy to go out in the woods is probably the day I should quit. That hasn't happened yet. So I think we're good.
You almost put that exactly the way I put it. I love it. That's perfect. Perfect. So if you could share with me your most memorable or your most exciting or favorite hunt you've ever had. Whatever it is.
You could, probably wouldn't be hard to guess. It's an elk hunt. back in 2013, we had been elk hunting hard, archery elk hunting hard, for probably going on 7 or 8 years, learning a lot, making those mistakes. And we had, my brother Ryan and I had 10 days, just the two of us. And we had chose to go on our first true backcountry hunt, where everything was on our backs completely, 10 days, you know, trying to figure out how we'd even get meat out of this hunt. Is literally the deepest, darkest canyon you could possibly find in the state of Oregon. I'm not even lying. And as we were hiking down into it, we both kept looking at each other like, we are idiots, but we're going to do this. So we set out. We did have a satellite phone at the time, just because we had never done this before and we wanted to be able to get a hold of somebody if we needed it, or try to contact a packer if We needed it. The weather was really hot. It was beginning of September. We were hitting 100 degree days. Oh. So we were concerned about what would happen if we did get meat on the ground. We dropped about, 3,000 feet, I'm guessing, into this hole. And there were bulls everywhere. I mean, absolutely everywhere. We didn't even come close to killing one. We did lots of setups. There's a reason they were big and there's a reason they were still alive. They were hard to get to, but oh my gosh, it was so much fun. We spent, I think, 3 days down in that hole, and it became very obvious that at this point we are going to have trouble getting an elk out of here. There's no packer crazy enough to come down here, even if we could get them down here, and we weren't going to be able to get meat out in time. Whether or not we can even get it out at all. So we kind of chalked it up to that was the funnest and coolest thing ever, but we better get out of here. So we hiked out of there, kind of recouped. We were beat. I mean, this country was brutal. So we were still in the same area, but we decided to try a different hole, maybe almost just as deep, but not quite as bad, a little bit easier terrain. To navigate. So we went in one morning, we hiked all the way back out to the truck, and then we went in a different direction about 6 miles, I think. And we actually just did that for the day because it was pretty, we just packed light and just kind of wanted to see what the area was like. And as we were hiking back out at about 5 miles from the truck, we ran into a herd on the way out that evening. And they were bugling back and forth. There was a herd bull, a nice 5x5, and a couple spikes. And so we just kind of put them to bed and tried to see if they were interested in talking to us. And they were talking to us. So we didn't mess with them too much. We went all the way back out to get ourselves ready for the next day. And then the next morning, we went back out and located the herd pretty much right away. And set up calling. We really didn't know who was going to be the shooter. We were just calling back and forth to each other. There were so many elk in the area that it's like whoever gets the shot gets the shot. And these elk, they would talk to us as much as we wanted, but they would not come in, and we could not close the distance without going along. We needed to go to them. So we played with them for about an hour trying to figure out where they were all going. And watched the herd kind of bed down for the afternoon. And we went ahead and dropped down and went to the other side, got on their side. And the 5x5 satellite bull that was with the herd, he was ready to play. I mean, he wanted to keep talking. Everything else was bedded down, but he kept talking back and forth to us. So it was going to entail dropping down probably 1,500 feet to get to him, because he wasn't gonna come up to us where we were. So Ryan, kind of assuming that I wouldn't want to at this point, he says one of us needs to go down there and just kill that bull. And like I said, he was absolutely surprised when I said, I'll do it. This is my bull. I'm going to get this bull. And he kind of looked at me like, I wasn't expecting that. Okay. He says, go after it, go get it. So he set up on the side of the mountain so he could kind of see the show. And I went ahead and dropped down. I kind of stripped off as much gear as I could because it got pretty thick in the creek bottom I was headed towards. And I just went for it. And Ryan kept him talking from the top because we knew he was going to be a little call shy. He kept skirting down the creek when he thought we were getting too close, and then he'd come back. So I stayed absolutely quiet and let Ryan just keep him talking. I just kept him located in the bottom of the creek bed. And as I got closer, I wasn't sure where he was because he had been running up and down the creek bed so much that I just was just trying to keep the wind in my favor and hoping he would pipe off again one more time. But by this time it was like, probably noon. And he had just kind of, they go silent in the afternoon, and he was pretty much done. Ryan was too far away. He's like, I'm over it. So I knocked an arrow and got myself in the best shooting lane I possibly could in case things happen fast. And I let off just the tiniest of cow calls. And instantly, as soon as I called, I walked forward because if he was close, I didn't want him coming right into where I was. So I wanted to be off to the side. As I did that, unbeknownst to me, he was right there. And all of a sudden he just did this whiny little, like, just a whiny little bugle. And he was 30 yards from me, maybe just down below me in the brush. Couldn't see him. So I started sneaking that way, thinking that he might pop out. Well, he was so excited about that cow call, and Ryan was watching this happen. I couldn't see anything. He watched us actually cross each other in the creek bottom. I was walking his direction. He was walking, and we actually passed each other. And then as he got past me, probably 20, 30 yards, he let off a little whiny bugle again, and I realized what had happened. So I turned around, and I could hear him coming up through the brush. And I went ahead and drew because I wasn't sure where he was going to pop out at. And I actually had to walk forward at full draw for about 15 yards, trying to get into the shooting lane where I could hear him coming. And it was, God willing, it was meant to be, because he popped up in the only window I had. I ended up shooting him for 40 yards just because I had a split second to decide. He was actually 36 yards. I shot, did not see where I hit him. I wasn't even sure I did hit him. He reacted like I hit, but I did not see my arrow hit. But he spun around like he had been hit and took off. And like I said, my brother's watching this through the binoculars, like, I can't believe she just did this. I can't believe this is happening. And then he sees me standing in the down at the bottom, kind of like with my hands in the air, like, I don't know. I don't know what just happened. And he couldn't see much at this point because it was so brushy. But he knew I had shot. And he knew that the shot was close enough that it should have been a good shot. So he came down, and of course I was shaking like a leaf. I couldn't believe this had just happened. And as we're talking, I said, I didn't see my arrow hit. I don't know. I just don't know. It's that waiting game. It's like, you don't know what happened. And about that time, I stood where I shot from, and Ryan says, I'm going to try to sneak over where he was standing and just, help me line it up, and we'll see if your arrow's there. We'll see if there's blood. So he just crawled on over there as quiet as he could. And while he's looking for my arrow and trying to figure out exactly where the bull was, he heard that, that kind of that death row breathing they do right before they die. And his eyes just got huge. I couldn't hear it from where I was, but his eyes just got huge. And he points, he wasn't that far from it at all. He hadn't gone very far, maybe 20, 30 yards.
Nice.
And yeah. And right about the time Ryan was sneaking back to me, all heck broke loose. You could hear the mountain falling apart, rocks falling. And you could just hear a massive boom at the bottom of the creek bottom where I'd shot him, and where he had stopped was about 80 yards, literally above a cliff into the deepest, darkest hole. So it was kind of like, it was the bull's last little,
F you.
Yeah, exactly. Screw you, lady. I'm going to make this hard on you. So we knew where he was, and it was going to take us a good hour and a half to get to him. So I'm like, he's dead. He's done. We couldn't hear anything else down in the bottom. So now we just have to find him. So it was a hot day. I think it was 78 degrees at this point. By the time this went down, it was probably like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So being the smart individuals that we are, we left all our gear at the top so that we wouldn't have to pack it back out again. All we had on us was our pack frames, knives, and a camera. And we took off. It was just brushier than all get out. I mean, it was almost impossible to get out. I wasn't even sure how we were going to get this bull out of this creek bottom. But we went after it, found him after about an hour, and we actually have this on video, and I bawled like a baby. It was priceless. We found him, took all the photos, and then started getting to work. And I kid you not, we got beautiful photos, but as soon as the knives came out of the scabbards, the clouds rolled in, the temperature dropped to 35 degrees, it started hailing, it was foggy, I can't even make this up because it was that bad. We quartered this bull up, and by the end of it, we got all the quarters off, got all the meat off, we didn't even have the dexterity to like cut the head off the spine. I mean, it was, our hands were absolutely frozen. We were soaked to the bone. It was raining. Of course, our rain gears, you know, 1,000 feet above us. And we are, I mean, truly in a stupid situation. I didn't realize how stupid it was until later, but it was not smart, and it actually got dangerous. So then was the problem of how do we get this bull out of here? He dropped 80 yards down just a straight, like wild salmonberry embankment where just grass and it was ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. But the way we had come was almost just as impossible to get a bull out of there. So we both strapped on a hindquarter, and it was dark at this point. I mean, it's pitch dark, and started trying to climb out of this mess. And it was, you know, take one step, slip down three. It was ridiculous, and it was about 80 yards of it, just gripping and just reaching for vines like your life depended on it, trying to pull yourself and, you know, an 80-pound hindquarter off this mountain. And after probably about an hour, we actually did it. I don't even know. We did it, though. We got out of there. And I was feeling really good about I mean, we're still 5 miles in. We have a long ways to go. But I'm like, we just accomplished that. I can't believe we got out of that hole. Granted, we have to go back down eventually and get more. But we got out of that hole. We're going to make it to camp tonight. And Ryan, nicest person in the whole world, literally the sweetest, kindest person in the whole world, he stood up when he got to the top, and I was a little bit behind him, and he turned around. This is how frustrated and cold he was. He's like, is that the fastest you can go? And he just lost it. And you can imagine what he heard a few words from me, and instantly he felt so bad. He's like, sis, I'm so sorry. It's just so cold, and I'm tired, and it's cold, and it's wet. I'm so, so sorry. You're doing awesome. And so from there on out, it was back to hunting happy. We were laughing. We were freezing our butts off, but we were laughing. Our headlamps went completely out. We did have headlamps on us, thank goodness, but they were just drenched. They went completely out. Oh. We were flying blind, literally. We made it up to where our gear was, strapped that on top of the quarters, and then we had about another, there was a trail if we could find it. And we were probably about 500 yards below that still. And we ended up boondocking completely. We didn't take a good route at all. Finally got up to it and started hiking out. And from there, it was just a grind. I mean, we were on a good trail. We knew where we were. We were freezing, but it was just going to be a grind because we were 5 miles, and it was 5 miles up to get back to the truck. So it was a couple hours. I remember it was about, oh gosh, 1 or 2 in the morning when we finally got to the truck, and we sat in the cab of my truck with it running for, oh, at least 2 hours. And both of us were too cold. We couldn't even untie our boots. Our fingers were so frozen. We couldn't even get out of our wet clothes because our fingers wouldn't work. And we sat there and finally thawed out a little bit. Neither one of us, we were too cold to go out and get anything to eat out of the cooler or whatever. So I will never forget this. It's my favorite snack because of it. We ate a bag of Fritos and bean dip. And that was our meal. And we just sat there in silence. Just both of us like, I can't believe we just did that. And we have to do it again tomorrow because half my elk is still down there.
Jesus.
So thank God the next day we had actually kind of connected with a packer in the area, and luckily he was as crazy as we were, and he was actually willing to help us go in and get that last half of my elk out. And that was a hairy ride in itself, getting horses down there, those poor horses. But we did finally get my bull out, took the rest of that day. We got him out, and we knew we were pretty much spent. I mean, we had 2 days left at that point of our hunt, and we were spent, but we were not done by any means. And we were going to double if it killed us. So we ended up packing up and going to an easier, I wouldn't say an easy place, but an easier hunting spot we have. And we were determined to get Ryan a bull. And then, and by the way, I did shoot that 5x5 bowl. I don't know if you can see it. It's actually on the wall behind me. That's why it gets center stage, because it's it is my most memorable hunt ever. Not my biggest or best trophy, but most memorable for sure. So we left, set up. We got to our next camp, I think at 3 a.m. Alarm went off at 4:30. Got up because it was our last day. Headed out and hooked onto a herd bull almost immediately. And actually there was another hunter in the area, and it was one of those deals where we were at least trying to politely get in front of him. I mean, it's every hunter for themselves, but we did manage to get in front of this hunter, and we were actually headed to a harder spot to get to, but this herd was right pretty close to the road actually where we parked. So we were able to set up, same deal. He would talk, but he wouldn't come into any calls. So we did the same thing. I hung back about 400 yards, kept him talking, would just let off a bugle every few minutes. The bull would answer me, and that would give Ryan just time to creep in. And he did almost exactly the same thing I did, except he was dealing with the whole herd. By the time he got in on this bull, the bull was herding up his cows and heading up the hill. And Ryan just let off the meanest, gnarliest lip ball bugle you could possibly imagine. And this bull came down to play, and Ryan smoked him at like 25 yards. Nice. And his was more of a tracking job. We had to leave that bull a little longer. It was kind of a tracking nightmare. The hit was ended up being pretty high, and he didn't bleed for a long time. There was tons of tracks. There was lots of elk in the area. His cows were sticking around. So we knew he was still there, but we ended up finding him quite a while later. But when we did, Ryan had killed, ended up being, I think he scored a little over 300. But to us, I mean, it was the biggest, most beautiful herd bull. It was the first time either one of us had ever killed a herd bull in that situation. And it couldn't have been more perfect. And where he died, he was only like 250 yards above the road. So it was like the icing on the cake. easy pack out. And I will never, ever forget that trip. I mean, it's the go-to whenever anybody's telling hunting stories. It's the first one you're going to hear from either one of us.
Nice. That's a good one. That's a really good one. Awesome. Well, I want to thank you for coming on. Where can our listeners find out more about you and follow along with your adventures?
Absolutely. I am on Instagram as Chrissy Hay Knox. You can follow me there. I am on Facebook as Chrissy Hay Knox as well. And I also have a public page that is... it's called Chrissy K. Bowtech Ambassador. So you can find me at all three of those facets. I would love to talk with you. I love following other hunters. And if you have any questions about what not to do in the woods, I'm your girl.
Awesome. So thanks very much for coming on. And we'll catch up with you. Maybe I'll get Ryan on too one of these days.
That would be awesome. Thank you so much for having me, John. I appreciate it.
All right. Have a good one.
You too.